How to prevent another banking crisis? Some in Congress say regulate the Fed and don't stop there. From Marketplace, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. In the wake of turmoil in the banking system that's seen three banks fail, some in Congress argue the solution is more regulation. Republican Senator Rick Scott and Democrat Elizabeth Warren have unveiled legislation that would add a new watchdog to oversee the Federal Reserve itself. That's just one part of the conversation on tightening regulation. Marketplace's senior economics contributor Chris Farrell spoke with my colleague David Brancaccio.
Level with me. There must be a better way.
There is a better way. But it isn't surprising that we're at risk to another financial meltdown. I mean, look, there have been various reforms over the decades. Dodd-Frank, Wall Street Reform, Consumer Protection Act of 2010. But they have fallen short of dealing with the systemic risks that come from these bank failures.
Silicon Valley Bank was initially included in tougher regulations that followed the last financial big collapse. But it's a regional, medium-sized bank. It was just under the limit for the tougher regulation and eventually got itself out from under the tougher rules because of its size. It's a medium-sized bank.
So here's the problem. Legislatures, regulators, they respond with addressing gaps in regulation and they add more rules. Yet as Andy Haldane, when he was chief economist at the Bank of England, he said, look, you don't fight complexity with complexity. Instead, embrace simplicity. By the way, this conversation is increasingly important because regulators have now decided, let's ignore this $250,000 FDIC limit because they insured everybody at Silicon Valley Bank and Signature.
We're going to be talking about this. Policymakers are going to be talking about this. What do you think they're going to look at?
You know, I think they're going to say, you're going to have more capital. I mean, look, there are a number of good ideas out there, but the one I would highlight, it's the Minneapolis Plan. It was developed by the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis in 2016. The Minneapolis Plan says, by the way, banks with $250 billion in assets, which, you know, good size bank, they have to hold common equity, not debt, but equity equal to 23.5% of their risk-weighted assets. If the Treasury decides, you know what, this institution puts the whole financial system at risk, 38%.
And I can imagine at the time there were bank lobbyists up in arms about that, bank managers worried about profitability, unless, of course, these higher reserves kept them from failing when push came to shove.
They hated the idea when it was proposed in 2016, because here's the thing, banks would make less money. So these kinds of equity levels might even push big banks to break themselves up or just accept lower returns. To modify a famous insight by economist John Maynard Keynes, if bankers could manage to get themselves thought of as humble, competent people on a level with dentists, that would be splendid. And a large equity cushion might well accomplish that goal.
I don't know. Is my dentist? Does the word humble describe him? I'm not so sure. The humble Chris Farrell is Marketplace's senior economics contributor. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, David.
That was Marketplace's David Brancaccio and Chris Farrell. The Federal Reserve raised interest rates yesterday by a quarter point. Before the current banking crisis, most economists were bracing for the Fed to go harder, raise interest rates by more. Part of the rationale for not doing that now is that banks are now in a bit of panic mode and not lending out as much money. That, in turn, could actually tighten credit and cool the economy on its own so the Fed doesn't have to as much. Diane Swonk is chief economist at the audit, tax, and advisory firm KPMG.
The really interesting thing is the most important credit tightening that we're seeing now as a result of the turmoil we've seen is credit access for firms with less than 250 employees. That's the backbone of employment gains. Nearly 4 out of 5 new job openings in the U.S. economy are among firms with less than 250 employees. So the concern is that you could slow down access to credit to those firms very dramatically, too quickly, and have a more dramatic pullback in employment in what has been the backbone of the labor market and a faster rise in unemployment.
Why would banks be more hesitant to lend out money right now?
Well, what we've seen is we've seen a lot of movement in deposits. And with that movement in deposits, there's not only less money to lend out, there is concerns about what banks have for liquidity. And I think the most important thing is to keep the banking system sound. This is in part what the Federal Reserve was looking to do, was to tighten credit conditions. This just accelerates the process. And the problem is what the Fed is worried about is losing control of that tightening of credit conditions.
That's Diane Swonk, chief economist at KPMG.
China's population shrank last year for the first time in six decades by 850,000 people. The country's population is now 1.4 billion. That could slow down the country's economic growth. And different parts of China are trying different things to boost fertility rates. Cash incentives, paid leave, even making it harder to divorce. Here's Marketplace's China correspondent Jennifer Pak in Shanghai.
China's sheer population size is often credited for bringing economic success. But over the last decade, China's workforce has decreased by 65 million people. That's like the entire population of France disappearing from the labor pool. The Chinese government has gone from enforcing, sometimes brutally, a so-called one-child policy to now struggling to get women to have more children. With less workers, there are less taxpayers supporting a growing number of retirees. But China still has a labor advantage, says the country's new premier, Li Qiang, because there are 876 million workers, including another record 11 million college graduates expected this year. China's workforce could be more productive, some analysts say, if officials lift education levels among those from rural areas. Other ways to offset the population decline include raising the retirement age and lifting restrictions on people from the countryside to settle in big cities with their families, measures which are less popular. In Shanghai, I'm Jennifer Pak for Marketplace.
We're going to find out how new home sales are doing later this morning. In January, they actually rose, a positive sign. But on the other hand, down payments are shrinking. According to Redfin, the average U.S. home buyer these days is putting down just 10% of the total price. That's down from a peak of 17.5% in the spring of 2022. Marketplace's Savannah Marr has more.
A year ago, the typical prospective home buyer had a lot of competition.
Last spring was an incredible market.
Jessica Louts is with the National Association of Realtors. She says the average listing was getting five offers. In some especially hot markets, it was more like dozens. And offering a hefty down payment was a way of telling the seller, I'm a safe bet.
If you put down a large down payment or pay all cash, you're going to float to the top of a multiple offer situation.
Plus, people had more money to put down, thanks to stimulus checks and lockdown savings, says economist Daryl Fairweather with Redfin. But higher interest rates have cooled the market and changed the down payment calculus.
Now sellers are much more willing to accept an FHA loan or a VA loan or another low down payment loan.
Fairweather says that's the silver lining for first-time and low-income home buyers. The catch? Higher interest rates mean they'll face higher monthly mortgage payments. I'm Savannah Marr for Marketplace.
And in New York, I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.